The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian World Cup Football Daily. England are in the semi-finals of the World Cup. And it was strangely straightforward. Harry Maguire and Dele Alli score the goals against a lacklustre Sweden. Their opponents will be Croatia, who were taken all the way by a valiant but ultimately defeated Russian team who went a long way further than we all thought they would. This is the Guardian World Cup Football Daily, and it might be coming home. We have a panel today. Paul Watson, nice to see you.
Nice to see you too.
Well, we spent the whole day together, haven't we?
Yeah, we spent many, many hours together.
Did you have a nice day?
Yeah, it's been lovely. Okay. Yeah, one of my favourite days.
Okay, great. Chris writes, can we have a laughing compilation of Paolo to end the pod, just to really annoy that one guy who hates his laugh? Paolo, hopefully in the next 45 minutes to an hour, you will laugh enough times for a compilation to be made.
I'm starting to feel pressure, a little bit self-conscious to deliver on you know, the laughter front. But the good news is we've eaten an industrial quantity of sweets during the last hour or 2 hours or however long it is we've been sat here watching football. So I'm a bit giddy, so it's quite possible.
Well, fingers crossed. Don't force it. If it happens, it happens. Right. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Johnny writes, hashtag pray for Barry. The Cannon Hunter writes, how is Barry? Richard says, how is Barry Glendening coping? Hashtag worst nightmare. Our Nigerian friend, Anu Adeo, says, how is Barry coping with England potentially winning this? It's tearing me apart that Max is only two wins away from being smug forever. Barry?
I'm all right. At this difficult time, I'm bearing up.
And just Paul says, how are you coping, Max? Given that any other tournament, you'd probably be on the beer right now, but instead you have to work. That is monk-like restraint. I will confess that I haven't been off it today, but it was a while since I had one, and I was very disappointed that the Croatia-Russia game went to extra time, and I feel like I have a slight hangover right now. Let's start then with England 2, Sweden 0. And before I get analysis from you guys, let's head straight to Barney Ronay, who is out in Russia. Barney, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Yeah, I'm still in... I'm just leaving the stadium in Samara and heading off to the favela where I'm staying, which I'm looking forward to.
In the stadium, how was that?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was pretty amazing. You could see, I mean, I thought started pretty badly. They were really scrappy. But then you suddenly just got this feeling that that they were just better than Sweden and they were going to win. And after the set-piece mastery, I actually thought they played really well at times. It's like watching Man City, the way they move the ball around. And we go again, on they go. And it's becoming a little bit alarming, isn't it? They're two games away from doing something that will be impossible to describe, get your head round, or believe has happened.
Yeah, I don't know how to act. I don't know how to behave at such a regulation victory at such a late stage of a major tournament.
Yeah, more exactly, and it just seems to a victorious quarter final. I mean, that just doesn't happen. And I mean, I'm not really an England supporter. I'm more alarmed by what other people are going to do, and I'm going to have to describe to them what they've just seen, and they're going to be delirious. And people seem to be kind of caught up in a kind of mad rage about this. And while I really enjoy it, and I think it's really interesting, I'm not sure I have the words to describe how excited they are. And I worry they might turn on me like a pack if I get it wrong.
Barney, you've never really been short of words to describe how something is. But
well, again, that's offensive. But we'll carry on.
Well, I'm not sure how it is offensive, but through no fault of their own, there didn't seem to be a huge number of England or Sweden fans in the stadium that had quite a lot of empty seats. Did that make the atmosphere a little bit weird?
A bit weird. The first chant I heard was a Rossiya chant. I mean, there were loads of neutrals there, loads of Russians. I mean, fair enough, it's in Russia. They're likely to want to go and watch it. But people struggled to get here. There were problems with flights. There just wasn't any availability. It's really far away and in a really weird place. And it's quite a weird city. It's incredibly muggy and shabby and dusty. It's not really a tourist destination. I think people literally struggle to get here. There were quite a lot of people. The England end was big. But I think what we're going to see now is Moscow is going to absolutely fill up with England fans. It's going to be ridiculous the next few days.
Does that mean you haven't got a sense of... We always sort of hear from the people who are out in Russia or out at any major tournament that they don't really have a sense of what's happening here. And obviously the sense that we have of what's happening here is seeing videos of Croydon Box Park and people being covered
in... Yeah, I keep seeing videos of people throwing beer in the air.
Yeah.
That seems to be the reaction to things now. Is that what we do? Yes. Is that what's been happening? I mean, is that on the street? Do people...
Well, a man in Clapham Junction jumped off a double-decker bus and fell through a bus shelter. Evolution has set in, Bernie. Evolution.
Yeah, it seemed... But from what I can see, the streets are absolutely packed. And people are out there going wild and crazy. And it seems a bit weird from here. Is that really what's happening?
The thing about social media is it's hard to tell how much more ridiculous we're being this tournament. Obviously, we've got to a semi-final than, say, 1990, because social media didn't exist, so we probably all did dance about, but we just didn't film it and send it to each other. Back to the game, Barney. Who impressed you the most watching in the stadium?
Jordan Henderson, actually. I know that's not a fashionable view, but I thought he played really well. And he's got that thing of running around with his very straight back, kind of pointing and shouting, that can be really annoying. And I kind of associate it with failed England performances of the past, where there seems to be a kind of internal struggle in the team to tell the other people they're not playing well. But I think he really led today, and he was really good, and he was exactly what they needed. I thought he was excellent. And actually, Harry was good. He was able to score. His link-up was really good. And they were just really solid, and they looked like they could actually pass to each other, and it was worryingly good, because from here only mad, strange things can happen. Do you want to hear my urination story?
Yeah, absolutely. We delayed this interview because Paolo had left the studio to do his business.
Micturate. He was micturating.
He was doing precisely that. And you said, Barney, you had a great story that involves urinating Gareth Southgate and the Guardian Football Weekly, which almost seems impossible to all tally together.
Well, it does. Somehow, that's the truth. I was just sitting with Nick Ames, and he was in the press box here, and at half time, he looked across at the urinal next to him, and Gareth Southgate was standing there, and he couldn't quite believe it. Everyone else in there was Russian. Nobody seemed to bat an eyelid. He came running back and said, "You won't guess who's just been standing next to me at the urinal." But he hadn't been made aware of this Gareth Southgate impersonator who's in the stadium and who just happened to stand next to Nick Ames in the gym. by a strange and unlikely coincidence. You can imagine his response. Southgate has literally run up from the dugout in order to have a wee next to Nick Ames. It seems so unlikely, but literally happened in his mind until he was disabused by the TV camera pictures of this lookalike who was being hugged and high-fived by everyone. And did look very good, I have to say.
Barney, this is... I don't know. England were 2-0 up, so I suppose it's not necessarily something to read into it at all, but it felt like the end of the game, there was a bit of a dropping of the pace going on. It's in my head a bit because a few players I've spoken to before from other countries have pitched to me the idea that England don't do well at international tournaments because they're always tired at the end of long seasons. Was there anything in that at all, that England maybe end of the game didn't have the legs anymore? How hot was it out there as well? Because
are you talking about a winter break?
No, I'm not talking about that, please. I promise you I'm not.
It's the most ludicrous idea because...
I promise you that's not what I was angling for.
I don't know if you saw Belgium last night. They all play in the Premier League. Somehow they've managed to recover without a winter break and run straight all over Brazil. The reason England can't control the ball isn't to do with being tired. It's because they weren't adequately coached as children. For some reason, we
That wasn't so much what I was angling for, Barney. I was more angling for because we're over here and you're over there. You know, how much is the heat and fatigue playing a factor late in games?
Oh, I don't think it's a factor at all. It wasn't particularly hot here. And they seemed pretty lively to me. I mean, did they seem tired on television?
I was just so sort of bizarrely calm about it. I'm not really sure. I was sort of tending to...
I mean, have you looked at how much football they played recently? They really haven't played anything at all. They had a break after the end of the season. I think Sterling's played the equivalent of four games since April. I don't think Tottenham's got anything to do with it. If they can't do it from here, we'll simply because they're probably not quite at the level of France and Belgium when it comes to controlling a football. I think that they're all fresh and fine, personally.
Barney, I'm trying to persuade The Guardian to fly me and Barry over to Moscow. Barry is less keen. Can you sell it to him?
Well, if you do come over, you could stay in the Guardian flat, which would be nice for me. And there's a great street just up from where we are, which is full of restaurants and bars. And where I know most of the England fans will probably congregate. So we could, in effect, be there pretty much every evening with hundreds of England fans cheering about it coming home. And I think something Barry really enjoys.
Yeah.
But Moscow is also a great city. I mean, definitely worth coming to. It will be fun. It's going to be absolutely full of them as well.
Well, this is Max doing that thing he always does where he assumes everyone can just fall in with his plans. Because he does about 3 hours work a week and none of the rest of us have anything else to do. Quite apart from the fact that I can't think of anything worse than going to Moscow to watch England win the World Cup final. I have a holiday booked for the day after the World Cup final so I can retreat to a Spanish bolt hole and not think about what has just happened.
And every part of me wants to just be in the villa next to Barry the day after he arrives in Granada. Listen, Barney, thank you so much for coming on. We will no doubt talk to you after the semi-final and after our victorious final, either in person in Moscow or from the studio. Have a wonderful evening.
Okay, bye.
Barry, how did you did the minute by minute for the Guardian? How did you view this objectively?
Quite easily. I mean, but that's never going to be an issue. Although I did get a lot of snipey emails from people thinking they were rubbing my nose, and I kind of had a feeling England would win. I didn't think they'd win quite as comfortably as they did. The only thing is they won comfortably, and yet Jordan Pickford was arguably their man of the match and made three good saves. If two of those chances had gone in, which they probably should have, it would have been a completely different ball game. But you know, he's obviously on the team. It's his job to save shots, and he did. He did it very well. It looked as if he could have played till midnight and not let in a goal. I think Sweden will be very disappointed that they didn't give a good account of themselves. They've been renowned for their excellent defence, and they let in some sloppy goals today, I thought. The Maguire header, he just got a free header, and it was an unstoppable bullet header off his big slab head. And Dele Alli was left completely unmarked to head in from 3 or 4 yards out. It was said after the game they'd been practicing that in training, those little dinks into the box to get him free at the far post, and it worked. But yeah, Sweden should be disappointed. They're better than they played today. I think England are also better than they played today as well, to be honest. But it's very worrying.
Mm, it's coming home. Paul, less of this objectivity. I want some blatant jingoism from you over there.
Well, it's coming home. Mm. I can confirm it's coming home. I only have slight issues that I think we need to work through about the process of it returning home. And that is that I don't think England have actually played anyone very good yet. Now, my fear is that when England come up against, say, France or Belgium, and probably Croatia, they are actually pretty good.
I like how you've guaranteed the final before and you're unsure about the semi-final.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, I can't stress enough how sure I am it's coming home. Don't get me wrong. I would never, ever be unpatriotic enough to say it may not come home. But my slight problem being that I think there's a very English thing that's happened throughout this competition that we're saying, you know, we want to win the World Cup. We're going to be the best team in the world. But we've sort of gone to all lengths to try and avoid playing anyone actually good at football. So, you know, this was the English response from the very beginning was, I think we can win this, but can we just, you know, can we dodge Brazil? Can we dodge Argentina? Can we dodge Germany? We've dodged everyone, really, who's any good, to the point where it's actually quite ludicrous how far we've got without playing anyone better than, say, a championship team. But at this stage, my fear is that we're now going to play some pretty good teams, and that will be harder, I feel.
Well, it might be, Paolo.
I suppose it was interesting at the beginning of this game. It felt like Sweden were playing a kind of football that is perhaps a bit more reminiscent of the English lower leagues. They were going for those balls over the top. They were looking for very sort of direct route one passes. And for a very brief moment, you thought, oh, are England going to sort of actually know how to deal with this? They're more used to dealing with a different kind of football. And then it was fine. And I thought one of the interesting sort of notes in the build-up to this game already was Jan-Olof Andersson, the Sweden manager, was saying, oh, this is the first team we've come up against at this tournament who are, I think, I can't remember exactly how he phrased it, but I think he said almost as good as, because he was giving off some confidence, but almost as good at set pieces as we are. And of course, first English goal from a set piece, as now I think it's 8 out of 11 goals in this tournament have come from set pieces.
2 more than any other team, that is.
Yeah, and look, I think that England have been extremely smart, or lucky, who knows, but it certainly worked out very well for them that at the tournament where VAR has been implemented, where not always, and certainly in some of those early games, England weren't getting the fouls they should have done, but where defenders are working out they can't get away with as much in the box, they've targeted set pieces and they've exploited them. I don't know if I agree with Baz that Maguire's header was a free header. The man was there. I thought Maguire did a very good job of being more physical than his man. I think he made that header for himself. The second one was much worse defended, but I thought Maguire did well on that first one.
And actually, Maguire, Barry, has become one of the talisman of this England team, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Such a bastard, aren't you? Is there anyone you'd like to praise, particularly from that England team? It's interesting that Raheem Sterling once again got the lowest in the player ratings, but actually his movement is so essential. He stretched that defence so much.
Yeah, well, player ratings are voted by the general public, aren't they? These are the ones of the BBC, and indeed he was the lowest. That was pointed out by Matt Dicko from the Times, and I checked the Guardian player ratings of the 11 starters. He was the lowest, and this was about 90 minutes after the game. It's ludicrous, you know, but you can't let the general public vote on anything. They elected the Tories. They voted for Brexit. They elected Trump in the US. You know, they can't be trusted with anything. It is ludicrous to suggest Raheem Sterling was the worst player on the pitch. I thought pretty much everyone played quite well. Dele Alli certainly wasn't as good as him. But, you know, if you score a goal, that masks a multitude of sins. His sin in particular, giving the ball away repeatedly. You won't get away with that against better teams, I think. I thought Kieran Trippier was absolutely outstanding. His deliveries are just brilliant. They're so dangerous. And
the rise of Kieran Trippier has been strange.
Well, I remember the night I did the... I was out in Sky doing a feature on Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher and Ed Chamberlain's show, Monday Night Football. And it was the first time Burnley had been promoted to the Premier League. And then they got relegated and promoted again. But he was playing for them in a match against Chelsea. And the army of nerds out there in Sky, they came up with this statistic that he had apparently contributed 24, 25 assists from the wing for Burnley in the season. They come up from the Championship. So, I don't know, what was that, 5 or 6 years ago? And, well, he's obviously kicked on and got better and better, but his deliveries are wonderful. I thought Pickford was good as well. Stones was excellent. Jordan Henderson was excellent. And, yeah, Harry Kane had quite enough game, but, yeah, it's a single Sterling out for abuse. It just, people buy into the... You know, he's had his character assassinated by various tabloids over the last couple of years, and people believe what they read because they're gullible.
Yeah, I completely agree about Sterling. I think Sterling is really important for stretching play for England, and sure, Rashford can do that as well, but I still think it's nonsense to suggest that he was the worst player on pitch at all. I also agree with Baz that Trippier has been fantastic this whole tournament. I thought he was good again today, but just sort of because I saw it, I think it's worth noting that the StatZone app was posting saying 10 crosses in this game, none of them found their target. So 0-for-10 on his crossing is what the numbers say.
He's got to go, Trippier.
Is what the numbers say. But I think it's interesting that both Sweden and Colombia have... I thought both of them sort of seemed to set out to defend England quite narrow. That 4-4-2 Sweden play... The wingers really were tucking in, like when England had the ball, they were really sort of keeping it tight. And I think it's interesting that that's what teams are doing against England, daring England to cross the ball, because I feel like actually England are quite good at it.
Mr. John writes, should Danny Rose start on Wednesday? He's more energy than Young and his left foot would be useful. Young cuts back on his right too often. Barry?
I think it will be harsh to drop anyone from that team. I think the Ali, Ruben Loftus-Cheek debate may rage on a bit, but I'd imagine Ali will keep his place because he scored. But I did notice actually at least one occasion in that game where Ashley Young didn't cut inside. But the point being, it's such a rare thing that it was noticeable.
Mm.
But
yeah, I wouldn't change it. You can't change that side. They've done so well to get to the semi-final of the World Cup. It's completely ludicrous to even suggest anything.
Wasn't it Young's ball for the first goal as well? Wasn't it Young who set up the Maguire header?
Correct. Yes, so there you go. An assist. More than Trippier, who's got to go. Chris says, the Sweden keeper sported short sleeves and an undershirt. What do you make of this travesty? Since that's the same get-up as... the greatest goalkeeper in the world, Jordan Pickford, I have no issue with short sleeve goalkeeper shirts if they wear an undershirt of the same colour underneath it. Chloe says, the most annoying repeated phrase shouted during a match, just spent 75 minutes next to a bloke yelling little triangles over and over again. on the baby news, Andreas Granqvist had a baby girl, Mika. Fabian Delph's baby hasn't been named yet, but in the post-match interview, he called his wife a machine. it's got the impression that she just, sort of pops out babies, sort of like a production line. We had a question. We watched it together, Barry. You were at work, but we all watched it in my flat. Would you rather...
What did you know? Isn't that cozy?
I did invite you, Barry. Would you rather be Fabian Delph's baby or Andreas Granqvist's baby?
God. I think I'd rather be Andreas Granqvist's baby, but I'm not sure why.
The conclusion we came to was that Granqvist won't have quite as... He'll be well off, obviously, but not to the ludicrous wealth of Delph. So that as a child, you'd still have to do something with your own life. It just wouldn't be handed to you on a plate. And therefore, better to be Granqvist Jr. And the quality of life in Sweden is... Everyone's happy in Sweden.
Yeah, I think I'd quite like to... I'd rather live in Sweden than...
Manchester. Yeah, fair enough. Geraint says, what does the future hold for books, following Martin Keown's advice that readers should get a life? On the UK TV commentary, Martin Keown was being his sort of suitably dour self, making me depressed in the first half hour when actually I just needed to be a bit patient. And he, apropos of nothing, just said, there might be someone back home reading a book. They need to get a life. Is literature over, Paul?
We think it'll survive. We think literature will pull through this. I mean... Obviously, literature has been in existence for thousands of years. Mm. But
Martin Keown was essentially doing that jump he did at Val Nistelrooy at literature.
At literature, yeah. And I mean, it's a huge blow, obviously, to books and to anyone involved in them. But I think, again, I think they'll muscle through. I think Keown's got to learn it's not got to be books or football. I think you are able to do a bit of both.
It reminds me that Bill Hicks gag where he talks about he's in some waffle house in Alabama reading a book, waiting for his food, and the waitress comes over and says, hey mister, what you reading for? He's like, what am I reading for? I guess I'm reading so I don't end up a waitress in a waffle house like you.
We're huge fans, by the way, of any of our audience who do work in waffle houses.
I'm quoting Bill Hicks. They're his opinions, not mine.
Chris says, if England win the World Cup, will Barry strip naked, cover himself in honey, and run around Trafalgar Square with an England flag?
No.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Okay. Are you sure, Barry?
Why would I? Well, not I'm just honey. Curious to know why I need to smear myself in honey. Like, it doesn't really add anything to the spectacle.
Well, au contraire, it does to me. I don't know about you, Paolo, but if you're going to run naked, I would like it to be in honey.
Right, well, it's not going to happen.
And if we can get tickets to the World Cup final, do you want to come?
Not really. I mean, I'd quite like to go to a World Cup final, but ideally I'd like to go to one that England aren't in. And I also have a holiday booked for the day after.
Yeah. Anyway, England will
As
be,
have you, I believe.
There are issues with the future Mrs. Rushton about how I'm going to get to Namibia, but, you know, we'll cross that bridge. Look, England are going to be in Russia until next weekend. They're either going to play in the World Cup final, or as someone tweeted me the other day, would it be great to get to the third place so that our reserves can have a go at revenge against Belgium's reserves? And that'll do for part one. In part two, we will discuss Croatia's victory on penalties against Russia. Welcome to the Guardian World Cup Football Daily Part 2. Barry, on Thursday, we are doing a live show. Me, you, Philippe Auclair and Ellis James.
Yes.
It's at the Emmanuel Centre in London. There are still tickets available. We have two running orders, very firmly based on what happens on Wednesday night. It will either be...
I haven't seen either of them.
No. I mean, they're both empty at the moment, but one is England are through to the World Cup final, one are England aren't through to the World Cup final. So come along, and we could do both, couldn't we? We could do part one, we're in, and part two, we're not in.
Well, I am slightly concerned about what we're going to talk about.
The World Cup.
And if England are still in the World Cup, in the final, obviously, they will still have an interest in the competition one way or the other. I do think we need to get an English voice on the panel who is slightly less deranged and excitable than you.
I treat that as a grave insult, but I also can understand. And basically, you could pick the man who jumped through the bus shelter and they would be if you're around. So please come along Thursday night, Barry, Philippe, Ellis and me. Russia 2, Croatia 2. Croatia threw on penalties, Paul. By the end of that game, it was a bit more like a war than a football match. Not in terms of violence, just in terms of the number of bodies were just strewn around the pitch.
Yeah, it was exactly probably what England were hoping to see, in that the people who came through that game are mostly incapacitated and physically and mentally scarred, and most of the Croatia players are probably dreading the thought of playing England, I'd imagine, right now. It was basically the game you would choose to watch if you were Gareth Southgate, where, you know, bodies flying around, cards going left, right and centre. I think Croatia somehow managed to avoid any suspensions, despite the fact every single player has been booked in that squad. But still, yeah, it would have been incredibly draining for them. I imagine they're running terrified of England. I mean, I would be if I were Croatia right now.
It was 9 players on a booking before the game, including Rakitic, Brozovic, Mandzukic, Čorluka, Piazza, Rebic, important players. Mm. They managed to get 4 bookings and none of them were the 9 who were already booked. Well, good tactical choice of who gets booked.
Important players and Čorluka, I would.
All right, yeah.
But, I mean, it wasn't a fantastic game of football, Barry, but the drama of it and the fact that Russia came back again, you just felt it had to be Russia that were going to go through.
Well, it was pure theatre. I mean, they went ahead, Cheryshev, wonder strike. It's just, wow, where did that come from? Mandzukic teed up Kramaric for the equaliser, and then I think wasn't it Kramaric who hit one off the foot of the post that somehow didn't go in? You know, everyone immediately, social media lit up with speculation about Russian skullduggery.
Vladimir Putin had a button to make the post square. You know those square posts you played in football when you were under 11s? That's what Putin could just turn it square for 1 second.
And then, yeah, Vida scored with his header. I don't want to see him win a World Cup just purely on the strength of that undercut alone. It's hideous. And then you thought, right, Russia, they're down and out. And Fernandes equalises with a header from a free kick. Mandzukic was standing behind him, just dead on his feet, couldn't... I think he made a token effort to jump, but it was... He was just clearly hoping the ball wouldn't come to Fernandes, who it was pointed out by... who's
commenting? John Champion.
John Champion is only eligible for Russia because he... because of some official decree, you know, handed down by Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, he played in a friendly for Brazil, and a presidential decree from Putin mean he's allowed to play for Russia. Paolo, Croatia played brilliantly against Argentina earlier in the competition. And from that game, a lot has been said about how good they are. But how good are they?
Well, they haven't looked particularly good in either of two knockout games now. I mean, yeah, they've obviously had to get through both of them on penalties. I've thought in both games, unsurprisingly, Luka Modric has looked like one of the absolute best players at this tournament. I thought he was a joy to watch again in this game, but not a lot of other players were. I thought Mandzukic, up to the point where, as Bas said, was completely sort of just dead and unable to follow his man on that... second goal, he had played really well as well, but there was a lot of less impressive performances throughout the rest of that team. I thought that, yeah, on balance, they looked like a slightly better team than Russia. I thought they played the better football. They certainly had a lot more of the ball than Russia, but they didn't create that many openings. It wasn't like beyond the effort that came off the post, you could think of a hatful of great opportunities that they missed. And I think the fact that they were so dead on their feet at the end of that game bodes very, very well for England indeed. They've now gone the full 120 minutes plus penalties in both games. So, yeah, it's all to England's benefit.
It's a weird one with Croatia because I think they're quite unpopular among vast swathes of the Croatian community because of the Mamic trial. Luka Modric is looking at jail time when the World Cup is over, because he's on trial, has to go on trial for perjury, and that doesn't look particularly good for him. That blonde lady who was sitting beside Gianni Infantino at the game, who, you know, constantly shaking hands with her Russian, some sort of Russian counterpart, she's the Croatian president. She's very good friends with Mamic, who is now holed up in Bosnia Herzegovina because he got sentenced to 6.5 years in jail. So Croatian people are very... and Dejan Lovren is caught up in this scandal as well. And a lot of Croatian people are very sick of this scandal that's dogging Croatian football, sick of sort of government kind of involvement, and sick of the players remaining resolutely tight-lipped about it when some of them seem to be in it up to their necks.
Do you think that would all be forgiven if they won the World Cup? I tend to think...
You'd imagine so.
Yeah, I tend to think those English players could have all committed heinous crimes and we would forget them immediately and give them royal pardons.
They can do it retrospectively, I imagine. So if we do win the World Cup, they are then free reign to do whatever they like for a set period of, say, 4 years.
Well, you think maybe Luka Modric is very aware of the fact that he might be, you know, playing himself... or playing for a presidential pardon of some kind if it's required down the line. I'm sure any jury would look favourably upon him, or judge possibly if it came to a point where he was being sentenced for anything.
The first penalty of Russia, Paolo, by Smolov, was a very bold attempt at a Panenka into the corner, which I've never seen executed before. I mean, he did everything right. He waited for the keeper to go down and then chipped it to him, which almost took the commentators by surprise, as if the penalty shootout hadn't even started yet.
It was a bizarrely bad penalty. Well, we've seen quite a few penalties this tournament, and there's certainly... has there been one worse than that? I don't think there's been one worse than that.
He hit the target, to be fair.
Well, yeah, but even the ones that were off target felt a little bit less heinous than that. That was a very odd and... More than just odd, I think, when you have a penalty that bad at the start of a shootout, it's quite deflating for your team to see a penalty that bad start a shootout as well.
The keeper had time to go down to the ground, and his teammates were saying to him, it's there. And he sort of looked up and then caught it.
Especially because we were all sort of at that point going, well, Subasic had his hamstring injury, and was he going to be quite up to everything? And yeah, to gift him one that easy.
We were Googling whether it's possible to change keepers during a penalty shootout. Did we find out?
Yes, it is. It's not only so, if you haven't used your substitutions, it's possible to sub off your keeper during a penalty shootout if they're injured.
Oh, really?
If you haven't used your substitutions. But okay. Croatia had, but they could have changed him for an outfield player if they wanted to.
Does he have to be injured? Because... Do you remember the Netherlands? Didn't they make a great... they had to get their sub keeper on for the penalty shootout before the final whistle went.
I think if it happens in a shootout, like during the shootout, there is an element of referee's judgment. Like, is this a sincere injury? Which is a bizarre and unusual part
just,
of the rules.
So you just have to think, how badly would your keeper have to be doing after, say, two penalties for you to tell him to feign injury so that then you can bring on another goalkeeper who you'd hope might be slightly better for the last three? That would be an incredible insult on him, wouldn't it? Well, look, that's the semi-final. England versus Croatia. Barry, if you objectively were to pick a favourite in that game, who would you pick?
On the evidence of... I think Croatia should be better, but they haven't impressed me much in the past two games. If they play like they did against... who was it? Argentina? Mm-hmm. They'd be anyone, but... if I was English, I wouldn't be... overly concerned.
It's just ridiculous to think about going into a semi-final of the World Cup and not be overly concerned.
Croatia are the best footballing side, the team most capable of playing an expansive game that England have played so far. Hopefully it'll be a more open game than the two games we've seen England play so far, because England come against two opponents who really sort of dug in and sought to shut them down. But I think on the quality we've seen so far at this tournament, England have nothing to be afraid of.
All right, that'll do for part two. In part three, we'll have a little look ahead to the first semi-final, France-Belgium. Any other business, and we'll just see if Barry or Reid it's coming home. Welcome to part three of the Guardian World Cup Football Daily. No pods until after the first semi-final, which is France versus Belgium. Paul, who do you think will win that game?
For me, it's a bit of a heart and head thing in that I really would love it if Belgium could win that game. But I think France are just too good.
What part of your heart is Belgium?
Not a large part of my heart, but I've really enjoyed watching Belgium in this competition. And I think the thing with the two teams is that I feel like France has got so much more to offer than they give. France kind of give you out these little glimpses of what they're capable of, but they're a pretty sensible team and they're playing sensible football very well. Whereas, you know, Belgium are brilliant and explosive, but also can be terrible, as you saw against Japan. You know, they can switch off. So... I would love Belgium to show up and be explosive, but I just feel like France are the better side.
Lucas Hernandez, the France left-back, on facing Eden Hazard, said, "We've already eliminated the best player in the world when we knocked Argentina out in the last 16. He barely touched the ball. What? It's the truth. We will have to make sure Hazard sees as little of the ball as possible." Is that the best tactic for France? I mean, it's interesting to know how... they're both... it could be as exciting as the Brazil game. I mean, France are slightly more sensible, I guess.
I don't know if you could look at that Belgian team and say realistically, oh, you shut down one player and you're going to quiet them. I mean, Kevin De Bruyne's an excellent player. I think if you take out Hazard, you're not going to suddenly take away their potential to be creative and do things. France have, I suppose, risen to the occasion in two very different games so far in the knockout round. The Argentina one was topsy-turvy and wide open, and they did what they had to. And the Uruguay one was a team who had come to frustrate them, and they managed to find a way through that. They haven't been brilliant, but I don't know if you'd look at any of the teams left in this tournament and say, wow, they've really sort of blown your socks off all the time. So I think I still expect France to come out of that tie. I don't know. I think there's... a little bit more solidity to them, as Paul was saying. The thing with Belgium is when they've put it together, they've looked sensational. But in every game, in the knockout, certainly, they've given moments where they have looked very vulnerable defensively. They obviously conceded two at the beginning against Japan. And against Brazil, with better finishing, they could easily have gone from 2-0 up and lost that game. So, I feel like they've been sort of a patchy team, a bit uneven, capable of some of the best football in the tournament, but I'm not sure I still trust them yet.
Barry?
I don't have a strong opinion either way, which is, you know, obviously not why I'm here.
We know why you're here, Barry, and it's coming up shortly.
I couldn't choose between them. No outcome of that game would particularly surprise me.
One for you, Paolo, while you're here. Mm-hmm. We haven't touched on it yet, this Ronaldo to Juventus story, which I initially completely dismissed because I just presume he's going to play for Real Madrid for the next 200 years. But there is credence to it.
Yeah, well, to be honest with you, my initial reaction was similar to yours. I thought this was just one of those summer stories that was bubbling away for nothing. But I can say at this point, it's absolutely serious from Juventus' point of view. They are speaking to his agent, Jorge Mendes. They are trying to make this transfer happen, and their share prices have taken a significant boost in the meantime, which gives some indication of why they're so eager to make this transfer happen. Juventus are fighting to make themselves a global brand on the par with the very biggest clubs in the world, and they have a natural sort of handicap in that Serie A does not produce the same revenues as the Premier League, does not produce the same revenues as La Liga. They have to sort of really, you know, work harder than clubs in those divisions, or certainly Madrid and Barcelona in La Liga, to brand themselves and to get that international attention. So they are willing to go really far on this, and they're, you know, have the backing of Fiat, and there is all sorts of sort of creative solutions being worked on to make this real. The thing that I can't say and still don't know, and still don't know that I trust, is whether or not Ronaldo might have his own ideas about what he's doing this summer, and wouldn't it be great to leverage those ideas by getting a big club like Juventus to show a lot of attention and make a serious offer. That is speculation, but Juventus would desperately love to make this happen.
So you'd say it's more of an off-pitch than on-pitch decision?
No, it's obviously an unpitched decision. Juventus want to win the Champions League. Cristiano Ronaldo is still, while he's not at his peak anymore, he's 33. Is he not at his peak? I don't know. He's scoring a ton of goals in important games. He is still an absolutely game-changing player. But if it was just about his on-pitch contribution, I can't imagine Juventus, who have run themselves as a very sensible, tight ship financially these last few years, would do it just for someone who scored those goals. They will do it for someone who will score those goals and who will create potentially vast revenue streams for them.
Paul, Soccer PM has been in touch to say, how is the CONEFA World Cup coming along?
Oh, it's done.
Who won? So
it was won by Carp Italia.
Who are?
They are the Hungarian minority in Ukraine. For the few people who don't know that. They won the final against North Cyprus on penalties, in fact. Unlike the FIFA World Cup, we don't have extra time. We just go straight to penalties. And it's actually been quite interesting trialling that. We actually did it because our schedule was so tight that our teams were playing lots of games back to back to back. So we didn't want injuries to start to be a massive problem. But actually, it's really interesting when you take away the penalty shootout, how it changes the mentality of those last sort of 15 minutes. I think we saw that with sort of Russia and Croatia. Sometimes there are points in games where teams sort of know you're headed for extra time and there's a sort of lull. It's really interesting to see what happens if people know actually there isn't that opportunity. You've got to go for it.
Thank you, Paul. Finally, Barry, lots of requests today. Where's my jumper, Sultans of Ping? Giles, it's been a wonderful World Cup so far. One of the highlights is Jordan Pickford. Another is Barry's readings. Any chance of It Wasn't Me, My Shaggy, especially for Jacob, my lovely son and avid podcast listener? I don't know how old Jacob is, but it's not a child-friendly song, is it? Gavin says Ice Ice Baby. Francis, will Barry do My Humps if we win the World Cup? Tom, is it time for Barry?
While I'm smeared in honey, running naked around Trafalgar Square.
Of course it is. Is it time for Barry?
Across the St. George.
Is it time for Barry to read the lyrics to Football's Coming Home? I don't think it is yet. However, Rude says, will Baz finally do My Humps? Or if not, World in Motion at least. And that seems like a great way to end today's podcast. England are one game away from the World Cup final. Paul, thank you so much for coming
in. Thank you.
And spending the day with us.
Yeah, a long day.
A long day. Paolo, same for you.
Yeah, cheers.
Thanks for coming over. Thank you, Max, for cooking us the barbecue. That's fine. Ladies and gentlemen, we leave you with New Order, The World in Motion, as read by Barry Glendening.
Express yourself, create the space. You know you can win, don't give up the chase. Beat the man, take him on. You never give up, it's one-on-one. Express yourself, it's one-on-one. Express yourself, it's one-on-one. Express yourself, you can't be wrong. When something's good, it's never gone. Love's got the world in motion, and I know what we can do. Love's got the world in motion, and I can't believe it's true. Now is the time. Let everyone see you never give up. That's how it should be. Don't get caught. Make your own play. Express yourself. Don't give it away. Express yourself. It's one-on-one. Express yourself. It's one-on-one. Express yourself. You can't be wrong. When something's good, it's never wrong. Love's got the world in motion, and I know what we can do. Love's got the world in motion, and I can't believe it's true.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.